Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Putrajaya is once again at odds with the palace. This after Attorney General Idris Harun declared that there is no constitutional necessity for the new Prime Minister to seek a confidence vote when Parliament sits next week. Now, the AG argued that there is no need to legitimise the appointment of the Prime Minister and that the confidence vote would in fact undermine the powers of His Majesty. Now, the AG's statement, however, seems to contradict a statement by the palace itself that following the appointment of Ismail Sabri as Prime Minister, that he should seek to confirm his majority in a parliamentary vote. So is the constitution a clear guide to what needs to be done next? We'll speak to a couple of lawyers tonight for their opinion. Let's begin with Niu Sin Yu. He joins us now. Good evening, Sin Yu. Thank you for being on the show tonight. So does a prime minister appointed by the Yang Dipertuan Agong require a vote or confidence at Dewan Rakyat? I mean, what does the constitution say about this?
Hi, thanks for having me again. To answer that, I think it is quite important to distinguish between what is legal and what is political. As far as the law is concerned, there is no such requirement for the Prime Minister to hold a vote of confidence after being appointed as Prime Minister. Under Article 43 of the Federal Constitution, when the Yang Dipertuan Agong appointed Ismail Sabri, it means that Ismail Sabri is in the His Majesty's judgment likely to command confidence of the majority of the Dewan Rakyat. There is no other requirement, and Ismail Sabri's appointment is not conditional or contingent on him holding and passing a vote of confidence in the Dewan Rakyat. And as far as politics is concerned, the Yang Dipertuan Agong had decreed that any Prime Minister must hold a vote of confidence as soon as possible to prove that he commands the confidence of the majority. Now, for all intents and purposes, this is good democratic advice, and it's certainly what is expected of a Prime Minister. But it is not a legal requirement under the Federal Constitution.
Sin Yu, is there a question of context here? Many Prime Ministers are appointed after an election when, you know, when votes are secure and MP numbers are counted. But this is a situation where there's a change of Prime Minister, as it were, midway. Without that legitimizing exercise of an election, does that matter at all?
Not from a legal standpoint, because if we were to take that example, if we were to contextualize it, Muhyiddin's appointment was under, you know, more murky circumstances than Ismail Sabri. We don't know exactly how many votes Muhyiddin got, but for Ismail Sabri, we know that it was 114. So as far as the constitution requires, that is simple majority. And the Yang Dipertuan Agong was right to say that Ismail Sabri is the prime minister because he is somebody who commands the confidence of the majority. So if we were to compare how prime ministers are being appointed when there is a change of prime minister, not by way of a fresh election, I think it's the same, really.
All right. Sin Yu, I read that you have argued that, in fact, there needs not necessarily to be a vote of confidence to test majority, that a confidence test can come in many forms. Can you elaborate?
Well, in many ways, once a prime minister is appointed, he cannot avoid a test of confidence because that is what is required of him in order for him to be able to do his job as the prime minister. He needs to carry the king's speech. He needs to pass bills, pass the budgets, and conduct the day-to-day running of the government. And he's not able to do so. He would not be able to pass the king's speech. He would not be able to pass bills or all the budget if he does not command confidence of the majority. And And at any opportunity, any given opportunity, the opposition is able to show that this prime minister is not someone who is able to command confidence of the majority by defeating the bill, defeating the budget, or even defeating the King's speech. So it comes in many forms, not necessarily by way of a vote of confidence.
Senor, however, can we just return briefly to the Attorney General's statement? Because he goes on to say that to demand a vote of confidence would be to undermine the powers of the monarch, when paradoxically, it was the palace itself that had made, as you characterize it, a suggestion or advice. So who's right? I mean, is the Attorney General in some sense arguing for the palace against the palace?
The way I read that statement of the Attorney General, I think it's a bit of a law being mixed with politics here, because until we reach that part of his statement, he was stating what the law is, and correctly, if I may add. And I suppose in the context of his statement, what he meant was you can't impose a condition on the appointment of the Prime Minister, and this condition being the condition to carry out a vote of confidence, because the Constitution is very clear on that. I don't think it goes against the palace, because His Majesty would be quite aware of His Majesty's powers under the Federal Constitution, and certainly His Majesty would be very well advised and very well aware that His Majesty cannot impose a condition, a legal condition, on the appointment of Prime Minister by requiring the Prime Minister to hold a vote of confidence in Parliament. So I interpret His Majesty's statement to require a holding of a vote of confidence as something as a good democratic advice, which is, you know, quite rightly put, that for the government to move on, for there to be less political turbulence and put to rest once and for all whether or not this Prime Minister commands the confidence of the majority, there needs to be a vote of confidence. But that right. is not a legal requirement. That is good democratic advice.
Sinyu, thank you so much for
thank you.
Joining us on the show and giving, you know, being very clear in that explanation. Appreciate your time. That was lawyer Niu Sinyu. We're going to take a quick break, but stay tuned to Consider This. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, with me, Sharad Kutin. Attorney General Idris Harun has declared there is no constitutional necessity for the new Prime Minister to seek a confidence vote when Parliament sits next week. But legal opinion is divided about the letter of the Constitution, Convention, and the political necessity for legitimacy. So we have lawyer Nizam Bashir on the line. We're going to ask him his opinion. Nizam, good evening. Thank you for being on the show tonight. Nizam, is the Constitution clear on whether or not there is a requirement for a vote of confidence after a Prime Minister is appointed, or is there room for interpretation? Nizam, we have you here, so I'm just going to repeat my question. Is the Constitution clear on whether or not there is a requirement for a confidence vote after a Prime Minister has been appointed?
Well, if you look at the text, most certainly, there's no express requirement for a vote of confidence when the Prime Minister is appointed. But nevertheless, to my mind, the context matters. This is not the case of a Prime Minister being appointed after securing a successful win in an election. The present Prime Minister, Yang Amat Berhormat Ismail Sabri, was appointed only after the 8th Prime Minister resigned. Now, that's the context. Now, when you look at that context and you look at the case laws from other jurisdictions, it appears to hold that Yang Amat Berhormat Ismail Sabri ought to hold a floor test, which is meant to prove his majority on the floor of Parliament. And that should be his first order of business. Now, this is certainly the case if one keeps in mind the principle, the democratic principle underlying the Constitution, and the fact that it is a Parliament that represents the will of the people and no one else. So the floor test is meant to demonstrate majority support, and it must be held in Parliament. And I think when we are looking at answering that question of whether or not the Constitution requires a vote of confidence, I think you can't look at it in isolation. You must also look at the fact that on 18th August 2021, Duli Yang Maha Mulia, the Yang Dipertuan Agong, decreed that the 9th Prime Minister must still file a motion of confidence in the Dewan Rakyat as soon as possible to confirm his majority support in Parliament. So given the above, in my view, there's nothing unclear, nothing that truly requires interpretation as such. A vote of confidence must be held in Parliament.
Nizam, there's been some confusion as to the nature of that statement by the palace about a vote. Some people call it a decree. Others suggest it's advice. How do we understand the intention of the palace and whether it's binding on the prime minister to do so and the consequence if he does not?
I think to appreciate what was decreed by the Yang Dipertuan Agong, I think let's firstly consider the relevant text of the Federal Constitution, which is Article 43, Sub 2, Sub A. And that simply says the Perdana Menteri must be a member of the House of Representatives who, in the judgment of the Yang Dipertuan Agong, is likely to command the confidence of the majority of the members of the House. Now, to my mind, that judgment that this particular member of parliament is likely to command the confidence of the majority of the members of the House, manifested itself in the following manner. Firstly, by way of the appointment of Yang Amat Berhormat Ismail Sabri as the 9th Prime Minister. And then, over and above the appointment exercise itself, there was the added decree or condition, if you will, that Yang Amat Berhormat Ismail Sabri must hold a vote of confidence. Now, of course, there's some debate as to what that particular additional decree is all about. I'm not minded to agree to say that that's merely advice. This is what you should do. I think when you look at all the things that the Yang Dipertuan Agong has been doing thus far, he's trying to ensure that there's unity as far as possible, and members of parliament serve the needs of the rakyat during these trying times. So I don't think it's mere advice. I think it's a bit more than that. And I think it's going to be quite interesting, especially if parties begin to dispute as to the exact nature of that particular decree.
So is that what we're looking out for next, Nizam? I mean, ahead of next Monday's parliamentary sitting, is the, you know, whose court is the ball in now? Are we going to, do we have to wait for a response from the palace with regards to this?
Well, I think the palace has been quite tactful in terms of tackling all the issues that's been playing out in our country so far. Now, on the one hand, we have the Attorney General taking a particular position where the law is concerned. And presumably his views as to, you know, what has been reported in the media is also similarly his advice to the 9th Prime Minister. I remain hopeful that Yang Amat Berhormat Ismail Sabri would exercise his mind independently of the advice so given, and opt to carry out the decree of the Yang Dipertuan Agong for there to be a confidence vote. I frankly do not foresee that there will be any issue in terms of Yang Amat Berhormat succeeding in that vote. But either way, I'm similarly aware there are contrarian voices out there who have taken a different view. And in fact, for that reason, they say the confidence vote is not necessary. But if we look beyond the legalities of the confidence vote, I'm more inclined to say that the confidence vote actually will signify the ethos of the present administration. And hopefully that ethos will be this, that this is a government that's not tolerant of corruption. This is a government that has the interests of the rakyat in mind. And this is a government that seeks to uphold the rule of law. So in that sense, I suppose you now know what I'll be looking out for when the Monday sitting comes along.
Understood.
Nizam, very quickly, you know, there's been a lot of chatter about this and references to history and previous times. Does convention play any role in how Ismail Sabri should make that decision?
Well, when you look at constitutional law, it's not just about the text all the time. Yeah, convention certainly matters. Now, you've had two previous prime ministers, incoming prime ministers, Tun Hussein On and Abdullah Badawi, And both, when they came in, both called for a confidence vote. And to my mind, I think it's going to become quite relevant in terms of what Baroma Ismail Sabri has got to do when he's trying to decide how best to move forward. And conventions, I think, is going to weigh very heavily on his mind when it comes to that particular decision-making time.
Right. Nizam, thank you so much for being on the show. That was lawyer Nizam Bashir. Another quick break on Consider This, but don't go anywhere. We will be back with more analysis. So stay tuned. Hello, thank you so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. But if you've just joined us on the show, we're discussing the Attorney General's statement that there is no necessity for the new Prime Minister, Ismail Sabri, to seek a confidence vote when Dewan Rakyat sits next week. Joining us now is political analyst from University Malayat, Hamidin Hamid. Hamidin, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Do you find this move not to seek a confidence vote somewhat peculiar? I mean, especially considering that the support for Ismail Sabri from 114 MPs is not disputed by anyone, not even by the opposition. So are you reading the AG's statement as a sign that Ismail is no longer confident that he has the 114?
Hi, Melissa. Thank you. Shira, thank you for having me tonight. I think it is a very interesting statement. Politically, I think this statement is landed Ismail Sabri in a bit of hot soup in the last couple of hours. And I think if he didn't rectify this statement, I think he will face more storms in the future in regard to the vote of confidence. I put it into two contexts. Why? First, I think because he's already a decree by Tuan Agong that he must hold, whoever become the Prime Minister must hold a vote of confidence. That's kind of an agreement, a gentleman agreement between the palace and whoever the candidate who will become the Prime Minister of Malaysia. Second, in my point of view, is about a go against the will of the people. Yes, Yang Tuan Agong have the right legally. I think nobody dispute that. Even though AG mentioned that the vote of confidence is going to undermine the power of Yang Tuan Agong, I totally have a different opinion on that. I think, yes, legally Yang Tuan Agong have the power to appoint, but the will of the people must also be exercised in the parliament. So, and that, in my point of view, parliament is the best way. We are using the representative democracy, so our wakil rakyat in the parliament must, in my point of view, shows and who is to have the majority. With that, in my point of view, Ismail Sabri have no other choice rather than exercise his power to have a vote of confidence in the Dewan Rakyat.
Hamidin, is it likely that the Attorney General would have issued a statement without first getting the agreement of the Prime Minister? Could he have done so without Ismail Sabri's go-ahead?
I think normally it's not, Shara. I think normally how the government work, in my point of view, because he is also a part of the government. Normally, in my point of view, AG will do issue a statement based on approvals or a notch from a Prime Minister office, especially from the Prime Minister himself. This is where, in my point of view, why I was a bit surprised with the statement, and it really much caught us by surprise with that statement. Looking at a couple of contexts, currently, because at the same time, in my point of view, the appointment of Muhyiddin Yassin as chairman for the National Recovery Plan also didn't sit well with UMNO and many other political leaders. And with this statement, in my point of view, was too early for Ismail Sabri to create more enemies even before the parliament sittings start, which is supposed to be starting on the 13th of September. So I think he will have a full plate facing the parliament on the 13th of September.
That is very interesting, Hamidin. The question is, who is Ismail Sabri more afraid of? Is he more afraid of the Bersatu Bloc and made Muhyiddin Yassin chairman of the National Recovery Council to shore up support? Or is he more afraid of UMNO 15, the UMNO 15 group, and what he could stand to lose by making Muhyiddin Yassin head of this NRC?
At this particular moment, I think, Melissa, sorry to say, he's afraid of everybody. is not only for UMNO 15 or Bersatu. I think he's tried to please everybody at the same time. But in my point of view, he have quite confident within the UMNO, which I don't think UMNO want to rock the boat while he is the prime minister. So he must please more towards Bersatu and other not to rock the boat. Because in my point of view, even UMNO want to make a move to to go against Ismail Sabri, I think that would be a very bad move because UMNO already used their cards against Muhyiddin Yassin. So people are watching at the same time about UMNO. So this is why when I said if people think that when UMNO managed to remove Muhyiddin Yassin, show that UMNO still have the strength, For me personally, I don't think so. I think UMNO is still in the big problem.
I mean, you know, going into this, you would have thought that Ismail Sabri would be the most confident man, considering that, you know, he had that meeting with Pakatan Harapan leaders. He had that card to play in order to, you know, buffer him against any revolt, even by Bersatu. I mean, the question is he using, from your point of view, is he using the full range of possibilities before him in order to show up his administration, or is he playing a much more cautious game and hoping that the previous configuration pulls him through?
Yeah, I think he tried to play a bit of both, Shira. This is where you are right. We have a good chat today after the statement of the AG with among us, the political analysts, because he already have a very kind of a right foot in the office. I think he is a very clear number, even compared to Tan Sri Muhyiddin. He has a very clear number of people supporting him, 114. And he managed to give a talk and have a kind of general agreement with the opposition, in my point of view. So with that, I think it is clearly, and looking from a convention, I think he knows that one of the biggest mistakes of Muhyiddin Yassin was not ever to hold a vote of confidence. And this is where, in my point of view, tradition is important in Malaysian politics. Tun Hussein Onn also took over the office of as a prime minister in the middle, similar to the situation when he took over from Tun Razak. And the first thing that he did was put vote of confidence in the parliament. Yes, if you look after that, Mahathir Mohamad, he became the prime minister, also in the middle. What he did, because now the context is no general election, he hold the general election in 1981, 83, and the same with Abdullah Ahmad Badawi. So this is where, in my point of view, MS Sabri must have a confidence, but as you said just now, I think he tried to play safe at the same time.
If I may just go back very quickly to the AG's statement, we have a couple of minutes before we end, but I just want to go back to the fact that, you know, this is another occasion of Putrajaya being at odds with the palace. The last time Muhyiddin Yassin failed to comply with the Agong's request, it led to a constitutional crisis. I'm just wondering, Hamidin, is this something that you are looking out for? I mean, could we be headed down the same path leading to a constitutional crisis here?
I think, interestingly, Melissa, the way I see it, I think for the past couple of years, there is a tussle between the palace and basically the political side. And in my point of view, as a Malaysian, I'm a bit worried looking at the current situation where palace exercising their power in that sense. For example, in my point of view, I don't think Yang Tuan Agong should give the statement about the Prime Minister must have the vote of confidence in the Parliament. I don't think that's a right for him to give that degree in the first place. Anyway, but at the same time, I think a lot more will come between the palace and the political side soon in Malaysian politics. Because, you know, when things are rotten in the central, everybody will come to claim their fiefdom. So this is what happened in Malaysian politics now.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us on the show. That was political analyst Hamidin Hamid wrapping up this episode of Consider This. But before we leave you tonight, a quick reminder that you can get all the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines on astroawani.com as well as our Astro Awani app. Thank you so much for watching the show. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Have a great week ahead. Good night, folks.